listening to Trending with Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timmery holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timmery.
So good to be back in studio with all of you. I am happy to have with me today Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. Dr. Philip Chavez is doing incredible work right now, really calling men into their mission. If you have been listening to Trending regularly, you know that Dr. Chavez is a regular guest with us now, really bringing that masculine side of what's missing in our culture.
That's right. It's always great to give that input to Marie, and always thank you for having me.
Of course. So you actually have a couple retreats coming up really soon for men, which I want to talk about a little later in the show.
Okay.
So don't go away, and we'll be sure to post some of this on social media, but I want you to get a taste of some of the topics we're discussing. And a big shout out to everyone this weekend. I was at the UCCC conference. So that's for all of the Catholic college students up and down the state of California. And you guys, especially to maybe some of the older listeners here, I want you to be reminded of the hope that there is. It was incredible to see so many college students so hungry for truth. I mean, a coin could have dropped during any number of those presentations. They were just so eager to receive the information. And this is so counter the culture that they're living in right now.
Yeah, and I think kids are just looking for answers. You know, I mean, wherever they stand, whatever their opinions are, I think because they've been found themselves in a confusing world, when they hear the truth, it does resonate. I mean, they're able to hear it, they're able to receive it, and they're able to appreciate it, especially when somebody brings it out with conviction that they're
Absolutely.
Not used to.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. You can head over and learn more about his work at themensacademy.org. themensacademy.org. Dr. Chavez, I want to talk about, speaking of truth and how people are looking for that authentic truth, especially young people. Here are all these young people longing for the truth the church, the Catholic Church specifically, has to offer them. In fact, I had at one point a group of about 6-year-olds come up and say, we don't get what the church teaches on hormonal contraception. We understand the science behind it and what you
sure.
presented. However, what does the church teach? And we're able to walk through and they're able to see from natural law that leads to God, they can actually stand on sound reasoning and yes, call upon God, but also call upon the natural order of the body to say, yeah, I believe what the church teaches. And that reminds me of the importance of the church as we're seeing people like Chris Pratt.
Sure.
Right. Who's, I mean, incredibly popular right now.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt has come out basically kind of criticizing the idea of belonging to a church and holding fully to their ideology.
Sure. I wonder if this case, Timmery, though I only took a look at it a few times and just in my own reflection of it, it's not quite clear to me he's necessarily criticizing the church other than he doesn't have a way out of making or stating his position very directly.
So let's put a little bit more context to it. So what
sure.
happened is, and I'm not talking about the church as in the Catholic Church, but any church. He's not fully identifying with one. So here's what's happened. Chris Pratt was recently criticized by the LGBTQ community for belonging to a church that they claim is hateful and anti-gay and so forth. And so Chris Pratt really came out saying, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. And he goes on to explain that my church welcomes everyone. And he even talks about his own lifestyle and how some of the things he's done in his life, although it's not what the Bible teaches, people have been alongside him, accompanying him. Now, I think that he does a good job of saying, yeah, everyone's welcome in the church. And no point during his comments does he condone same-sex activity. He just says, my church welcomes everyone.
Sure.
But what stood out in the interview to me in his statement that he put out is he says, quote, no church defines me or my life. He goes on to actually say, my values do define who I am.
That's right. Well, you have to remember in the evangelical church he's in, you know, in some way they're not so much church-based in terms of their authority or their identity. They would rather see it more in Scripture or in Christ himself directly. So I could see where we would navigate such that he wouldn't say the church is where he finds his identity. But he should see at least that the church is responsible for teaching him and that they are leading him to the truths of God. And that's ultimately what we're for, those truths which lead us to heaven. So he didn't see at least that connection, which I think he should have.
Well, and I think more so, not so much looking at where he's at, but where most people are. A lot of people are saying, no church defines me, no religion specifically defines me. I might adopt some of the values. I might hold to a cultural Catholicism, or I might attend Mass, but I don't subscribe to what the church teaches on certain ideologies.
That's right. And so, you know, he's just really fostering what's common for him and those he knows is a skeptical mentality where there's really no absolute truth. And the church isn't necessarily a harbinger of that truth, such as we hold as Catholics, but rather it's just a form by which he's able to worship and pray and to share the word.
But would you call it skeptical, or would you say it's a relative Christianity where we are deciding, yeah, I'm Christian, but I'm going to decide what my values are, and Christianity will not define me and what my values are?
That's right. And skeptical is used in a different sense, but I think they're both related. Yeah. So he's finds himself in a relativistic disposition where he won't maintain any absolutes, any moral or doctrinal absolutes in that sense.
That's yeah. Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. I'm Tim Ray Millington. We're talking about these comments by Chris Pratt. I mean, incredibly popular right now. And he's saying, no church defines me or my life. No values define who I am. And I think that this is the challenge of modern day Christianity and modern day Catholicism. We are not looking to what is absolute truth. And this is what is so great about the Catholic Church.
That's right.
Everything the church says is so anthropological.
That's right.
It takes us deeper.
That's right. So we do hold that church has the truth and is able to teach it, but it's also able to lie it with natural truths too. Not only seeing that what she teaches in terms of authority from a doctrinal standpoint, but yes, when we look at things, especially of the human anthropological order, there is a real accounting for it by nature, a real explanation that is natural based.
And I mean, this is something you see because in your PhD studies, I mean, you studied marriage and family.
That's right.
And you saw how the natural order based on natural law, it's consistent with what the church does in upholding marriage and family and children at such a high level because it's the basic truth and pursuit of human happiness.
That's right. And that's, yeah, that is where we find our happiness. And it's the church which needs to foster that happiness, and to God, we need a church to guide us and to show us where we're going wrong. Otherwise, we're just a law unto ourselves. And so the church gives us that guidance, and it was able to give those deeper explanations by which we can hold on to her truths with some level of added conviction, not only that we receive from a church which has the authority to teach, but also arguments which just on the natural level make sense and really work.
Here's a question. I want to challenge you guys listening. What is love? We have to really get at the core of this, because here all these young girls came up saying, you know, what does the church teach about contraception? Ultimately, the teaching on contraception boils down to what is love.
That's right.
And here Chris Pratt, in more of his statement, at one point goes on to say, God of love, acceptance, forgiveness. He talks about God doesn't hate anyone. No, God doesn't hate anyone. He loves the sinner. He hates the sin. Yet, you know, people keep making these statements like, oh, I hate this phrase. We've got to love up on each other.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, it's so annoying. But we can say what is love in the heart of contraception, in the heart of the issue of pornography, in the heart of the family, in the heart of someone who's wanting to leave their marriage. We can say what love is.
That's right. And ultimately what love is really to will the good of another, as we're told by the scholastics, at least in our own faith tradition. Well, loving the good of another, which means what's concomitant or what's consequent of that, is you actually carry through with the good of the other. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to a contraceptive act or any of these acts, really we have to consider what truly is the good for the other. And we're able to see that through the effects of contraception, some other sins, the effects are actually profoundly negative. So we could see that, at least in retrospect, when we could see and show that, well, these negative effects can come about from these actions. Yes, it is one way of showing that they're really not truly making a loving act.
I might be opening up a whole nother can of worms here. But here's my take on something. I was really thinking about the issue of socialism right now and how I think because so many people have been so unloved, they've been loved in such a disordered way. They've experienced multiple generations of now not only divorce, remarriage, but multiple generations of drug abuse, sex abuse. I mean, this has just been such a norm that I think part of the reason so many young people are turning towards socialism is because they're saying, we just want to love everyone and give everyone access to everything they need because maybe I myself didn't get it. And maybe this is a solution in quote unquote loving everyone.
Yeah. And well, to look at a different dimension of that, Timmy, I think we're supposed to get love primarily through the family, right? Through a mother, father, brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles. And through all of them, we not only see them serving us in our good, but we see them taking care of us and providing for us. Now, that whole system is broken down. We all by nature want a family structure. And so if it's not the actual earthly family, then we make the family our community or the state. And I believe this is the cause of a socialistic system. That's why there's a big buy-in, because people have, in broken down families, see the state basically as their mother.
And this is a real problem in the culture. And this is why we could go so much into why socialism, the church teaches against socialism. That's not the topic today. But like you're saying, we're looking for the answer to the family, the heart problem in the government. And like you understand, like the young people today really do have a good intention.
They do.
Although they're looking to satisfy their own desires of their own heart that have been so broken.
That's right. And to depend on the state to do that or state entities doesn't really work in the end. And that's for a number of reasons. And very few people, you know, are able to find their services and their outreaches very effectively. They're even more costly, and they don't really serve the genuine needs that we really do have.
A huge shout out to everyone in Central California. I'm headed up to Fresno this weekend. I would love to see you if you're anywhere nearby within a couple hour vicinity. I'm talking on the pro-life issue. It's a free event. Head over to my social media to find out. I'm also headed to Texas right around the 1st, and I'll be speaking in Los Angeles at Knott's Berry Farm the week after that. Hope to see you there.
Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Hello, everyone. It's so good to be back with you. We are discussing the topic of Gillette and their latest ad. Now, this is really interesting. Apparently, the commercial came out about a month ago, but everyone's been sending it to me over the last week. Dr. Chavez, Dr. Philip Chavez is in studio with me from the Men's Academy. Before I even kind of comment on what the commercial is, we'll get into that. I want to hear your initial reaction to the Gillette Men's commercial.
My initial reaction, gosh, when I first saw it, looking back, yeah, I'd seen it about four or five times. I could see why some would, why maybe it might have been produced insofar as it seems to be the buzz now of toxic masculinity. And for those who have a buy-in to that, that would serve that kind of thinking or thought pattern. And at the end, too, there were certain correctives that men gave to one another that I thought there was, in some ways, some part merit in that, because men don't have, you know, examples of those who correct others, you know, right in the midst of a, you know, catcalling a girl or whatnot. And, you know, to have a man exercise some custody and restraint. So have another man right away correct him from that, especially a younger man, maybe in his 20s or at least 30s, as I saw depicted. So on some levels, I thought it was impressive. But you see, overall, I think most, at least maybe of my age, those that are older may not have appreciated that much, because that was not our opinion or what we wanted to otherwise see projected in manliness.
So those who did not get to see the Gillette commercial yet, it's about a minute and a half long. You can find it on YouTube. I'll be sure to send it out on social media after the show. But what happened is basically the first half of the commercial is showing one, I'm going to say minor, not to downplay anything, but one minor sexual assault after another toward women, whether it's catcalling, whacking someone on the bottom, maybe degrading a woman in the business arena. And it's just like talking about toxic masculinity and just showing the worst of men.
That's right.
And then it transitions and it goes into, you know, two little boys, you know, fighting and a dad breaking the boys up. And then it shows, you know, one guy kind of catcalling, running after a woman, as you mentioned. But then one of his friends kind of puts both hands up in front of him like, stop. Hey, that's not cool, man. Like, slow down, you know. It's an interesting commercial. I think the second half of the commercial, if left on its own, could actually be a really strong commercial.
I think so, yeah.
However, with the beginning of it, I think it made a lot of men just kind of feel lousy.
That's right. And it's just disparaging. I mean, it's the last thing men need. I mean, they're disparaged about their own manliness or their own masculinity so often. Last thing they need is something which super adds to that.
Absolutely. That's a Dr. Philip Chavez. I'm Timory Millington, or actually Timory Jaja now. We just got married. Still haven't gotten used to that yet. But you're listening to Trending with Timory. At one point during the Gillette commercial, they have Terry Crews, a brief moment where Terry Crews is testifying. I'm not sure exactly where he's testifying, but he's talking about the need for men to hold other men accountable.
Right.
And I thought this was really awesome because I don't know if you know about this, but Terry Crews has actually really come out speaking ardently against pornography.
Okay.
And Terry Crews actually shared at one point, I think he was with his recent wife, maybe engaged. I can't remember exactly the context, but he's at a party and someone ends up just reaching down and grabbing him in the crotch as like some sort of familial greeting to him. And he is just... was so upset in front of his wife. I don't think they ended up staying at the party very long. But in the midst of the Me Too movement really kind of coming to the surface, he talked about how, you know, it's not just women. It's just the way we treat each other in general. And it's this pornification of the human person that's become so damaging specifically for men.
That's right. It's an over-sexualized society, which I think we'll find things going both ways in terms of the sexes offending each other. But I think we just need more inspirational messages and corrective messages to really counter that.
Now, what's interesting is that Gillette's competitor, which is really interesting to think of them as a competitor now. You know, you have the Dollar Shave Club and you have Harry's now, these subscription-based competitors. But Harry's released a statement, I think about a year or so ago, and it was talking about, you know, what ultimately leads to male happiness. And one of the main things they discussed was how job satisfaction was at the heart of masculine happiness, but also talked about how some of the most happy men now are men who are married in their 50s.
That's right. Yeah, men who are finally stable, who are serving. You know, we only really find happiness until we find ourselves giving and really escaping ourselves. And so the men who are most miserable, and knowing many, and even maybe myself, my 20s and 30s, when things were so self-centered or self-oriented, our happiness isn't found there. It's really serving others. And by that time, a man in his 50s, of course, he's got a family or he's mentoring others, and or he's figured out how to negotiate himself in society. And now there's many opportunities he has to serve and get out of himself.
And that's what's so important at the heart of the issue. You know, St. John Paul the Great's theology of the body, as he was preaching this, you know, going back 30, 40 years ago now, and even his earlier teachings with young couples where he lived this out one-on-one, he had this call to the theology of the body. You know, the revelation of Adam and Eve in the garden is this material revelation of the bodies are naked, and on a physical level that reveals the physical gift that's meant to be given, but
yes,
it reveals an even deeper spiritual reality.
That's right.
And you take it deeper, you know, Jesus, when he's talking about lusting after someone, you know, if you even begin to lust after the person in your heart, you've already created a sin, not just by acting out on it physically.
That's right.
We're called to that sacrificial love that even in our thoughts, our actions, everything we do is meant to be centered around the cross, where Christ showed us the model of life-giving, self-giving love.
That's right. And just to go back to sexuality itself, you know, again, one of the things that's, I think, it's so hard to foster in today's society is that sexuality finally is oriented to the procreation of children, and so which ultimately redounds to the building of families, having children, serving them. And so I think what's happening in sexuality, we look at too much in that pleasure focus instead of what its true end is, its nobler end, which is really the procreation of life and serving and raising that life.
You know what this reminds me of is that many young people, when I attend various conferences, and it's actually one of the most common questions I get online as well. One is, how do I find, you know, a spouse? How do I find someone to date? The other question is, how do I define the difference between lust and love? And so many young people are asking this question because we're in such a pleasure-oriented arena, and they're seeing the Me Too movement so loud and proud right now that they're saying, I want to be better, but sure, I don't know if I know the difference.
Interesting. Yeah, it does become obscured, at least in the sense of our own processing of it, because we do have emotions, and the emotions in the natural order are aroused. But when people begin to see and to realize that if they're lusting just for their own gratification, or if they're desiring for their own self-gratification or what they can receive, then that becomes lust. But when it becomes really an attraction and for really seeing something of the good or something noble of the other, then you're reaching into love.
There can be love there. Well, and even if, I think sometimes if we contemplated nature more, it would put this into better order. Because you think, you know, you go out on a hike and you're looking around and you're seeing, you know, maybe you saw an eagle recently. I'm pretty quick at spotting eagles. I saw three owls in one day recently. You know, you're seeing the owl, you're seeing, you know, you feel the wind on your skin. You have this appreciation for what something is.
Sure.
What its proper place is. Yet for some reason, we're able to look at it in this way when we see nature, but not necessarily when we see people and appreciate them for who they are and recognize that they are good just like that hawk is good, just like the wind and the rain are good. We're not seen and appreciating and loving the person there.
And can it be, Timory, because in great measure, many have not maybe received the love that they have otherwise would have wanted. And you receive love mainly through persons. I mean, it's great to see God's love through his creation, through a hawk or an owl or an eagle. And in some way, we can absorb his love in that way. But really, ultimately, our love is to be exchanged through persons.
Right.
And so one of the reasons why sexuality becomes so confused, it really is a vehicle, for at least for spouses, to grow in love. But it's so easy to see it in light of something by which we can finally fulfill something or meet some kind of interior need that we haven't been otherwise been already needed or met rather by those who should have loved us early on.
So maybe you're listening and you're saying, yeah, I maybe have experienced this brokenness in my family. Maybe I've experienced this brokenness in myself, something I myself have done, you know, and I want to regain that authentic understanding of sacrificial love. You need to seek out those friendships. You need to seek out those people. Friendship is a difficult time in such a distracted world. Go join a men's group. Go and join a Bible study at church. Go to those young adult events. And I don't care if you're shy. Go and talk to people. Get to know them. Go and ask the speaker questions. Maybe ask your priest, hey, do you know any groups going on that I can be a part of? Mentorships.
Sure.
Ask these questions.
And again, all human love ultimately is ordered to divine love. And I think there will always be frustration in human love. You know, most married couples, or all married couples find this, where their human love grows short. And it's supposed so you can reach into a higher love, so you can see and understand that, wow, there is a higher love which I must reach. And so in all these things by which we reach out love, we have to remember, you know, we're made to receive God's love too. He is a Father, and he wants us to receive his love. And I think when we begin to do that and fulfill ourselves that way, it's a very primal way to understand. If we can give and receive love from God well, then we'll be able to give and receive God love with one another.
Let's talk about an opportunity coming up. You have a retreat in April for men.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about it.
What I'm hoping to do in that one, it's going to be a day-long program where in the morning I'll talk about a man's mission, identity, and journey. You know, I like talking about the 18 pillars of manliness, which I summarize in that starting manual, because what the difficulty is, I think what happens, men don't find out or understand who they are because they don't understand the wholeness of their nature. And there's 18 pillars of manliness I try to establish. But then in the second half of the afternoon, I hope to move more into what it is to move with God in that identity, more and more fundamentally with God heart to heart. Because what I find is that men, even though they learn their faith, learn their nature, they still need to be taught how to live it out, how to communicate with God, how do I relate to him, how do I reach out with him, Father, and as I really love to talk about what it is to move as a beloved son. And so that's what we'll mainly focus on in the afternoon.
So you can find that at themensacademy.org. I'm also posting links to it on Facebook and Twitter. But here's a great opportunity for men to dive deeper into their faith, seeking truth, authentic love, and freedom with relationship in our Lord.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
It's so good to be back with all of you. In studio with me is Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. You can find his work at themensacademy.org. We are, a little later in the show, going to be talking about Hungary and the family policy that they are incorporating in their country. Now, you may say, okay, that's, you know, nations away from me. I don't really care. You should care, because guess what? They're seeing a huge increase in births and marriages. They have actually even seen, you guys, this is huge, a 63.8% increase in their net average earnings. The difference of just 7 years between 2010 and 2017. They're doing something right, and guess what? They're basing their family policy after Pope Paul VI's teaching on married life and family, and Pope St. John Paul II's teaching in Veritatis Splendor, and really focusing on how family is the heart of a culture, of a society, and that is the only way we will survive. We'll be coming back on that, discussing it. Dr. Philip Chavez, I would love to get your thoughts. Recently, we're seeing more women in the feminist movement. In fact, some women who identify as being same-sex attracted, self-proclaimed lesbians, sure, are actually pushing back against the transgender ideology. I would love to hear your thoughts, because recently Tucker Carlson, just interviewed Julia Beck, actually discussing how she got kicked out of the Baltimore LGBT committee for speaking out against transgenderism.
Interesting. You know, thinking about this, you know, feminism, in one respect, finds its doctrine is one thing, but its genesis and maybe its platform is that women have been mistreated. Women have been getting a raw deal. Women have not been treated equal. And so when they find that in a transgender woman, a man becoming a woman, the man doesn't have that experience, right? That's not where he's coming from. It's not his experience. And so to become a woman and trying to manifest that earlier, that otherwise true experience of a woman, it's not something that he really has. And so a transgender woman can't really represent what feminism represents.
And that's, I think, what you're touching on, is we can see an element of good in feminism, because feminism is trying to say, hey, we're pro-woman. The problem is
right,
that they've distorted womanhood. They've said in order to be a woman, you need hormonal contraception to neuter your bodies. You need abortion in order to get through in life. And then you need to even say there are no differences between men and women, because we need to be equal. And we are equal in dignity, but different in who we are, how we are made up.
That's right. And to appreciate those differences is what feminism tries to obscure. And again, I remember you mentioning, you appreciated one earlier comment I made on the show, is that it's otherness men come to appreciate and love and find attractive in women. Mm-hmm. And so really, it's otherness we should be talking about more than equality. The talk of equality doesn't get us very far, I don't think. It may be in terms of social opportunity or economic, but it doesn't get very far in terms of human relationships, because it's otherness and specifying otherness of roles and attributes and things like that, which make relationship, which make love itself very beautiful.
I was speaking at UC Davis a couple years ago, and I remember I asked at one point, I said, just imagine, men, listen to me for a second here, that there were no women. Just imagine. And it was interesting, because a bunch of the guys, you kind of sat back, and then one guy goes, that would be awful. And the guy's like, yeah. And it's because it's not just boiling down to sexuality. He said something different would be missing in our world.
That's right.
Something that is so good and that is so beautiful.
That's
and
right.
I looked to the women and I said, imagine the same thing. Imagine that there were no men, because that's what feminism wants. And look how the men appreciate women, not just according to sexuality, right?
That's right.
But look, do you see what would be missing? Why are we trying to destroy this?
That's right. And remember, too, it's these qualities from the standpoint of manhood, okay, from a man. It's these qualities of women that we come to admire and then respect and want to safeguard and uphold. And so when men learn to admire that, they learn to see something precious, precious worth protecting. And so when they see the otherness in right order, then they'll want to protect that otherness. And so that's where a woman gets her respect. When a man sees something very special, something worth protecting, something precious, that he wants to protect. And so what happens, that ennobles him. But if it's all about equality, well, she's just my friend, and yeah, she's just my equal, and yeah, we just do things together, and there's nothing, you know, different about either one of us. Well, that doesn't ennoble a man to protect her, doesn't ennoble a man to stand up for her. Mm-hmm. And really, in the end, it doesn't ennoble a man to love her as someone precious.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez of the Men's Academy. I'm Timory. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Turn your phone into a mobile radio. Take us with you on the go. Head over to radiotrending.com. Don't miss an episode. Maybe you're missing a little bit of this episode today, or there's something that stood out and you want to share it with a friend or a family member who's really struggling with this issue. Now, Dr. Chavez, what you were just talking about was this desire for a man to protect a woman. But if she's demanding equality, or if he's viewing her from a viewpoint of equality, sure, he no longer is called into, as you mentioned, the God-given role of the protector.
That's right.
And maybe he might not even be interested in her as well.
That's right. Yeah, I don't think he will find a woman very interesting who's, you know, if she's going to be so equal, oftentimes, from my experience, women become very challenging. And they become very even judgmental and try to assess and try to, you know, and this is maybe quest for equality, try to one up or to try to take an upper hand, maybe in an argument or whatnot. So I think what men find when women are on this strong equality quest, they find women who are fundamentally kind of contentious toward them, and that mm-hmm. doesn't attract them at all.
Let's talk a little bit about the social sciences. So there was a study that came out last year. It had the hands of a handful of universities, and we talked about it here on Trending. I'm going to have to pull that source up again. But what was interesting is they pulled feminist women from all over the country. And they started asking, you know, what do you expect from men and relationships? What are the core, you know, things that you desire? And well, some of them wanted to be, treated equally. That wasn't the question they were asking. Mm-hmm. The questions they were asking, what do you want? They wanted to be protected.
That's right.
They wanted to be cherished.
That's right.
And although they still wanted equality, it actually began to shrivel away at their argument of equality, because some of the people were asking, well, if you want to be protected and treasured as something special is not exactly equal in the same exact way as to who he is, because he needs to see something other,
exactly,
as you mentioned.
That's right. And again, that's what makes it precious. And a woman wants to be adored. She wants to be cherished. And she must understand there's something other that makes a man want to do that and want to spend time with her instead of being with his buddies and doing things with his buddies. So, and really, this goes down to what really is at the core. I mean, women and men both, they can have certain ideologies about what they hold about the sexes or certain opinions or whatnot. But nature doesn't lie. You know, deep down in the heart, which needs to be tapped into, which I try to do in my men's work, is show the characteristics of that seem to be true based upon what people feel deep down. Mm-hmm. And that's what these questions and that's what this study did. They went, you know, deep in the hearts of women, which women don't lie. They know what's in their heart. They want to be cherished. They want to be special. They want to be particular. They want to be the only one. And so it's not so hard to dig into what's so strong in a feminine nature.
Good on her. I really want to commend Julia Beck for, even though she's a feminist, even though she says, you know, she identifies as a lesbian, she's saying, no, what's going on in the transgender movement is not okay. The fact that men are outperforming women in sports titles and scholarships because they're now allowing men to compete as women, that's not okay. And one thing she comments on, and I want to have respect for what she's saying, she said, I don't think it's appropriate for the T to be added on to the LGB in many cases, because from my experience, the LG and the B, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, that recognizes a sex, the anatomical sex still.
Sure.
Transgenderism is not rooted in biology and reality. And so I really appreciated that she said that.
Yeah, because I think at least you can appreciate it insofar as it goes into another realm of, let's see, I want to be careful what I say here, another realm of deviancy or deviant from what is the natural order, right?
Yeah.
And so transgender is deviant from what God intended, from the order that he intended. Mm-hmm. In fact, when you think about it, it's a very radical transition mm-hmm. to expect to not only just convert one's body from one sex to the other, but to expect an adaptation of soul. And that ultimately is impossible.
I would love to talk more one day about how the church teaches you are different even on the level of your soul. not That's seen right. yet different. And one of these days we're going to have to dive deeper into this. If you're listening and you love hearing trending, the topics we discuss, please head over to iTunes or whatever social media podcasting app you might use. Or even if you're on the radio, please help others find this, especially young people who are not listening on the radio. They're more so listening on the podcast. Head over to iTunes. Give us a good 5-star review. Tell us what you love about the show as well, because that will help make this content more accessible to others. And you really are participating in the mission, which we're all called to evangelization. Another thing I want to mention really quick, Dr. Philip Chavez sure. is here. There was an article that came out talking about how here are a bunch of pictures of people on this website, and none of these people exist. We hear about the deep fakes where you can kind of slap a face onto some pornographic sure. video and, oh, great, it's my girlfriend. I can watch her having sex, but it's not real. Now you can create computer-generated images of completely fake people.
That's right. And there are so many things which follow from that, or so many thoughts. I mean, in that way, you know, even when I saw the alterations of the changes of features, I thought that was kind of clever, at least technologically, which shows that you're quickly replaceable. And, you know, in fact, I started to think, gee, if women see these things, they're going to want to see, gee, how can I change myself?
Well, and women already do. We love right. seeing how we can alter our faces on the Instagram, Snapchat apps, because we can see, oh, I look kind of different. I look partially like an animal, or I just swapped faces with the friend sitting next to me and we have each other's characteristics.
That's right. So this kind of technology, I think what it does, it fosters more attention to physical features, and it detracts from the value of the human person from within.
And I think that's a great take. My take as well is also that it makes us so generic. Like, man, we can just create whatever. You don't have to That's be right. a person. You don't have to be the person that I meet. I can make you into what I want.
Timory will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Maybe you find yourself married and really trying to live off of one income. Maybe you find yourself married and struggling to make sure that your children are well cared for, and you're struggling with maybe sending them to daycare, not seeing them enough. Maybe you find that you want to be married, but just the financial makeup, the inability to own a home, the inability to pay off student loan debt is preventing you from getting there. Well, I want to present the Hungary Family Policy, because in Hungary, in 7 years, they have turned around their country to, I would say, a nation of hope for families. Mm-hmm. With me is Dr. Philip sure. Chavez. I would love to hear your initial thoughts on what's happening in Hungary.
Well, I think it's good that there is an awareness more and more that a good society, a strong community, is made up of families. You know, in the wisdom of even the ancients, the Greeks, the wisdom of the medievals, and the wisdom of our contemporaries, John Paul II, a society is made up of families. That's the unit of society. It's not the individual. And so the strong families, or strong families, make what we'd otherwise want to comprise as a strong society. And so the legislative, judicial, executive branches really must have in their sights what is the common good. And that common good is what serves families the best. And so when families are served the best and they thrive, that's what really makes for a thriving society. And so for any branch of government, that's what they should be fostering.
I mentioned this in the show earlier, but if you're just joining us, we've seen in Hungary, they've gone from 2010 to 2017, they have seen a 63.8 increase in net average earnings. That is a major increase. For anyone who's not maybe in finance or accounting buff, that is a very large increase. Well, what's happening? They're implementing family tax benefits. They're implementing housing allowances for families. They have benefits now for married couples to get married younger. One of the most recent things, and some of you may say, okay, Timmy, I've heard you saying this over the last 8-9 months. I'm saying it because it's working. And now what they're doing is they're saying for women who are under the age of 40 and have 4 children, we're going to completely obliterate income tax for you because we don't want to continue to tax you. We want you to be able to care for your family. And if you're taking on that part-time job, have a part-time job where that income is going toward caring for your family.
Yeah. You know, Timmy, as much as some of these things are good, and it is the duty of government to promote family life, and in doing that, to promote an ease, even a financial ease, and to have certain benefits and whatnot. But as I was looking through some of these things they want to implement, you know, 23,000 daycare centers within 3 years, paying grandparents to take care of their grandkids, that I think what's happening, they have to be very careful not to embark too much on state control and state management of the family. And we must let the natural order of the family kind of take care of some of these things. So, you know, I haven't looked at the economics of this, okay, so the economic impact that it's going to have. You know, even when you mention now, it's good that a woman may be alleviated of income tax if she has four children, but they put that in light of a woman. They didn't say a man. And so who knows if that may foster a divorce or her own independent living. You have to remember, in Europe, in these countries, you know, marriage is somewhat of a thing of the past.
Well, and just to respond briefly to that, even here in the United States, you get more money as a single mom than you would if you were married. And I have had friends from high school who did not get married, whose girlfriends would not say yes to proposals or wanted to pretend that they were married because they got more government support if they were single. Now, to my knowledge, I'm not saying that in Hungary it's if you're intact families. It's not, you know, just primarily single family or single parent homes,
okay,
which I think is good. And I agree with you. Government is not the end all be all answer. But when the government is friendly toward family and acknowledges family,
that's right,
and acknowledges the truth of family, that makes a difference. And here's one reason where we're seeing the change in Hungary. I mentioned this on the show before. Hungary last year decided to get rid of all gender study programs in their universities. The reason they did this is because they're really recognizing that this gender ideology and anti-family mindset is creating a problem within culture, and it's not based on scientific truth.
That's interesting. Yeah, and so they see it ultimately as not really benefiting the growth of their country, which is the fostering of good families, because these kinds of studies do find themselves getting in the way of healthy family life and healthy identity and healthy growth and relationships between the sexes. Absolutely.
Yeah, that actually brings up another topic. I always have, everywhere I'm speaking, someone who comes up to me and they're like, I'm stuck in a mandatory gender studies course. I'm stuck in a mandatory oppressed women gender studies course. You name it. It's just ridiculous, and they're having to take these classes. And my advice to you, if you're maybe in one of these circumstances, first of all, you shouldn't be majoring in it. If you have questions as to why, message either Dr. Philip Chavez or myself, and we'll talk you out of it or explain why it doesn't make sense. Here's the thing. I get if you are sitting here wanting to push back against your teacher, advocate for what you're believing in, do it. But I think the greater impact you can have is they're being brainwashed by the professors. Talk to your fellow students first and foremost, and seek to write truth in the things that you write, and write them, not just say, well, you're wrong, but write them and recognize, okay, here's where my teacher's coming from. Let's try to convince my teacher. Kind of be sneaky, be cunning in the way you respond, but teach them something, a different perspective.
That's a good point, and that students should learn in these things when they want to make changes, say in these programs, that their teachers or their subjects is working together. You know, one of the difficult things I think in contemporary education, we see students are pitted against each other. They're not really working together. They're competing for the highest grade. They're competing for the most favor and whatnot. But you make a very good point. If they can work together to address these things, I think they would find themselves learning much and making headway and bringing things in a better direction.
Well, we'd come back to true academia. We're debating. We're discussing in a respectful way. It's diplomacy, which I think a lot of people are missing, that diplomacy.
That's right. And you know, part of the university, part of the college experience should be that collegiality. Mm. In fact, that's what the word, where we get the word from. They're tied with each other. You know, they're those who study together. And a major part of learning is that you learn from your peers.
I want to get a little input from you on this topic. We're talking about university systems here. So anymore, to go through high school, you usually, especially in the private schools, have to have a high number of volunteer hours. Now, what made me think of this is I hear from a lot of young people who are like, I just have to get my volunteer hours. I just have to get my volunteer hours. They don't necessarily care what they're volunteering for.
That's right. Yeah.
And I mean, some of these kids, they have to have hundreds upon thousands of volunteer hours by the time they're done with their high school education, because that's supposed to be what qualifies them as a good citizen worthy of a college scholarship or even getting into a college or university anymore. But there's something wrong with that.
That's right. Well, I mean, inherently, if, you know, to talk about a mandatory volunteer program, it's an inherent contradiction, right?
It's not free.
That's right.
It's not given.
That's right. The word volunteer comes from the Latin volo volere, which means to will. And some what underlies that is to want. And so when somebody gives of their time and in the service of others, it's something that they should want to do, and something really on another level that they should be initiating themselves to do. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that these are forced or made compulsory, can actually make a student even be resentful that he has to serve.
Yes, resentful that they have to serve. Resentful, oh, you want me to carry a box now at work? I thought I was here to be the accountant. Yeah, you've got to move some boxes too every now and again. And we've kind of created what I'll call the entitled hedonist now. Because,
that's right.
Okay, well, I did my volunteer hours. I got my decent grades. I should get into this school. You know, I should have these opportunities. And so I see then in the college setting, so many people are not willing to step outside of their own comfort zone.
That's right. And what they'll see in employment, too, is that employees don't want to do much outside their job description. I have a friend who's in the contracting business, and some of the newer offices set up, the employees have to multitask, which may include cleaning the restrooms. And so sometimes, you know, employees will have a pushback. Well, that's not what I'm paying to do. Well, that's part of working as a team and to make this business thrive. So, I mean, we should be learning things which do give us a sense of what it does mean to contribute to the good of the whole, but it should be done from some kind of free will.
Some sort of free will. It's something to reconsider. And I think also really a message to parents that if your kids have these volunteer hours that they have to do, great. But use it as a teaching moment to talk about why they should, to choose where they want to serve, and talk about the importance of service and say, you know what, the mandatory element of the hours doesn't matter. Let's learn to serve.
That's right. And that's the end here. In fact, I think that's why the schools have been pushing this, is because they really want their students to come out of themselves, to be self-giving. So there's a sense that these schools recognize there's a value in that the students give to others. But yes, they have to be very careful in the way they implement that. And even, again, as you said, to make it so over-demanding, then it becomes quite a burden. And then they don't care how they get those hours, just as long as the box is checked off or the number is inserted. Mm-hmm. And so if I think to encourage volunteer work is good, that just has to be done judiciously.
Dr. Chavez, where can people find you next? Where will you be speaking next? I know you've got the retreat coming up that we mentioned.
Yes, at the end of, let's see, you know, it's interesting. There's one university, in fact, a man who heard about me from Trending. He's with a Hispanic group that's an alliance of students from Compton College, Dominguez Hills, and whatnot. And he's asking me to speak on patriarchy at the end of April. As we joked about, I don't even use that term. You know, so I speak about patriarchy, but he says, look, we may get some blowback. Some people may be protesting. But it was interesting how he saw this as foundational, really, in a strong Christian society community. So I look forward to that endeavor. That'll be the 29th or 30th. Of April.
That'll be a quick teaser. Maybe we'll take up the topic of patriarchy soon here on Trending. I want to challenge you, what church teaching are you struggling with? And if you say you're not struggling with any, then you don't know your faith. And so I really want to encourage you to ask questions, seek it out, and really pray, okay, Lord, help me to understand what this is. If you've enjoyed the show, head over to radiotrending.com and send me a message under the contact page.
This has been Trending with Timory. To learn more about Timory Millington, visit timory.com.